Hi.
Welcome to Homo Sapiens, the podcast for all your LGBTQ plus neighborhood needs.
My name is Chris Sweeney.
My name is William Young.
No, we're joking. It's vice versa.
Coming up on this week's episode, we are chatting to none other than Marika Hackman. I love her music. I've had both her albums on repeat these past few weeks.
She has a second record out called I'm Not Your Man.
And do you know what she is?
Go on.
She's a wise head on young shoulders.
She is a wise head on young shoulders.
What she's got that I think is fascinating to hear about is a young gay female angle on what it is to be an artist today, what it is to be a young gay female today.
Particularly with the last record I've just made, the response, like 15-year-olds and stuff, and coming up and being like, you helped me realise who I am. And I realised how important it was that I made that album.
Bit of a guiding light for how to embrace your sexuality and how to be brave. She's a brave person.
She's just followed being herself.
I didn't want anyone to ever think of me that I was using my sexuality to make a thing, to kind of get in with a certain crowd. Everything I write is just because it's happened to me, or like, it's all deeply personal.
Our conversation with Marika Hackman is coming up. Stay tuned, people. Are they even tuned? Stay podcasted.
The first time I came across Marika Hackman was a photo at a friend's wedding, but I felt bad I couldn't make the wedding because I had an anxiety attack. Flew all the way out to Portugal, didn't leave the room, flew all the way home again.
The fact that you had the panic attack not on Ryanair is the thing that amazes me.
I know,
me
that's
most.
Really weird.
Yeah, because
it was being around people. It was very weird. Anyway, I saw a picture of this young woman in a trouser suit.
An amazing
trouser. And it looked like it was sort of like maybe pistachio.
It was pistachio.
Was it pistachio? She was either giving a piggyback or having on someone's back being given a piggyback. And I just thought, who is this woman? I'm intrigued by her.
She's just got this aura about her. She just feels like a superstar talent. William?
Yes?
I've got a question for you.
It is cashmere, but it's very old.
Can we have a conversation about your hairstyle? I really like it.
Do you?
Yeah, because you've got a shaved inside parting. For
Cabaret, thank you. Grazie mille. For Cabaret the musical. Tickets are available from all good newsagents.
How's it going?
It's going great.
And you sort of get to ad lib every night, right?
Yes. So I told someone to shut up because they were talking.
In the audience?
Yeah.
Oh, brilliant.
And sometimes people take pictures. There's been a furore. Is that the word? Or furore?
I never know, but
no,
yeah.
There's been a furore. Photographers snuck in and took pictures of Louise Redknapp, who's my co-star. It's very interesting how I think famous women sell more papers than famous men.
Right.
If they're scantily clad, then the men will want to see it, I guess. They're like, oh, Louise. And women then want to see it as well and either be nasty or nice. You know what I mean? Be like, oh, I'd love to look like that, or I don't want to look like that. You know, any of that thing. I think it's like this weird kind of chauvinism that still exists. There's so many photographers outside. So many photographers.
Really?
Yeah. And I have been desperate to get in the papers, let me tell you. I've been wearing my Homo Sapiens t-shirt.
Oh, well done.
To promote not just the podcast, but the cause. You know, that's why I like this podcast,
you know,
by the way.
Split up quite a while ago.
Homo Sapiens?
The cause. Stop it. I am full of dad jokes today.
Yeah, you are, aren't you?
Oh,
there's a delivery. Actually, I've got lots to say about deliveries this week.
Really?
Yeah. I think this could be DPD. We should have a little bit of beef with...
Last week we had Will taking delivery of a slow cooker.
Sorry, that rhymed a little bit.
Someone called Bill is here. Will says he's forgotten he's coming. Here's Bill.
Bill has arrived from Humphrey and Crockett. I'll give them a plug. because I went to the Newbury show, the big like country fair, and I bought two solid fuel fires, and Bill has arrived to check out the fireplaces.
For friend, what have you been up to this week?
I've been looking after my sister's kids because my sister is on a well-deserved holiday in Spain. So she said, look, can you just come down for the day? And it was my day off from
life.
From the theatre. Mm-hmm.
So much to discuss.
Oh, my God. Can I just say that? I mean, it is four of them.
Mm.
You stop being a person.
What are you?
You're a cash machine.
Mm.
You're a taxi driver.
Mm-hmm.
You're a mobile clothes hanger.
Yeah.
Because they take their coats off and just shove them on. They don't even look at you. You know, they just shove them on. It's like, that's the kind of things I should be doing. You know, bin. I'm a mobile bin. They finish the drink. Just pass it to
wow.
you. Cook.
Yeah.
Cleaner. Peacekeeper. Yeah.
Kofi Annan.
I get called Buttface by my nephew.
Oh.
But the cutest thing is, the youngest boy had a tantrum, and this was his tantrum. So rather than, like, throw a chair down, you know, like the back of a chair, like tip it down onto the floor.
Mm.
He just very gently rested it down onto the floor.
Really?
And then rested another chair down. So it looked like someone's had a tantrum, but actually he's just gently placed them onto the thing.
That's sweet.
It was so sweet. In my head, I was like, that's the worst tantrum. And it was just adorable.
Oh.
I love them. And I felt very like, yes, I felt like a good parent. I've come to watch Sunday football. I played basketball with my nephew.
Did it give you...
I don't want kids.
But four, looking after four.
I know, maybe it's the four thing.
And also, they're your niece and nephews, but they're not yours. And lots of parents say to me, you don't like other people's children, you just like your own.
They're lying.
Really?
I just think they're lying.
Really?
I mean, the worst thing is, imagine if suddenly I'm trapped and mm-hmm. I'm like, I don't like my kids.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trapped now for the next 20 years. In fact, no, for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
I don't want to do this.
Mm.
I just don't want to do this.
You sell them.
The other thing was, I sort of felt like, actually, throwing out to listeners, it's really important
mm-hmm.
to keep hold of one's identity. I could very easily lose my identity.
With
like, where are those moments when I'm not...
Sashaying across
the... Yeah, gone are the days when I just threw on some makeup and off I went into the world. You know, like, when are those moments when I can still be not just a parent? Because literally, like, and I will finish soon, but literally, like, finish supper and then it's getting the school bags ready.
Yeah.
Sorting out all their everything, clean, washing, making them brush their teeth, while trying to stop the 8-year-old from trying to fit a toothbrush into the 6-year-old's ear and convincing them that it is now time to take away the iPad, and then cleaning up the house, getting breakfast ready.
Mm.
I got back to London at 3 a.m.
Yeah, I saw that.
Anyway, it was still delightful and I do love them. And actually, interestingly, I do feel a bit like I want to check how they're doing, because it's like, oh, I had to give them back up to my sister's friend who's babysitting
them.
They'll be like, who's
this?
Well, where's Buttface gone?
So at the football match, you texted me, it was very funny, saying people are kicking balls in my direction and it's terrifying the life out of me because it means you've got to kick them back, which is always my worst nightmare.
And literally, like, they were practicing penalties before the match and we were sitting on a bench behind the goal
because my
niece's boyfriend is the goalie. And I literally was like, please don't miss, please don't miss, please don't miss. And they kept on missing. Oh, mate, can you pass the ball? I don't want to. Because then I get nervous. And I used to play football fairly well.
Yeah.
So I kind of think I can at least kick it back. Mm. Suddenly it goes out the window. And I sort of throw it like behind me.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that was me at my peak. I was throwing it behind me. It's horrible. And I actually... We took the dog for a walk through Regent's Park. It's like running the gauntlet. I felt like, what's she called on Gladiator when they had to...
Jet! Oh no, Luka Johnson.
I felt like Jet from Gladiator having to run the gauntlet. Do you remember Gladiators?
Yeah.
And Erika Johnson.
Erika Johnson.
Who went out with?
Oh, Hunter. Gladiators was absolutely mental. And wasn't there a guy called Shadow? He was the one that could poleaxe people, and he was massive and with this incredible body. And his eyes behind the helmet were like, "I'm going to rip your jugular out."
Gladiators ready. He was great.
And then what were they called? Contestants ready. One. And you know what? I'm actually going to throw out a name of a contestant that I remember who won. I'm sure she, I might be making this up, I'm sure she was called Eunice Barber. Eunice Barber, Google. Oh my god.
Eunice Huffert. She became the champion.
Yes. Oh, Eunice Huffert, was it? Not Eunice Barber. Eunice Barber.
She went on and won and became champion in 1995. And she was a stunt person in Titanic. This is quite the rabbit hole we're down here.
This is incredible.
She was in Harry Potter. Oh. She's in Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them too. Florence Foster Jenkins. Not many stunts in Florence Foster Jenkins.
Eunice, I mean, when you filled in that form for Gladiators, did you think you'd be hobnobbing with Daniel Radcliffe and Maggie Smith doing a double suplex on Maggie Smith in Harry Potter?
That was my favourite bit. Yeah.
Ooh, that hurts.
Oh, don't.
The pride of Jean Brodie.
Speaking of coincidences, last week we had a message from someone called Rosie Lovell and we said, oh, I think I recognise that name.
It was an amazing name, wasn't it?
And you said, off the top of your head,
yeah,
oh, could be a chef. She has emailed in and said, I am a chef. Isn't that a weird, weird coincidence?
Well, I am quite shamanic. You know, I think, like...
That's my shaman noise. I'm not sure it needs work.
Well, sort of feathers. Rattle. Well, Rosie Lovell. Who would have thought it? Bill's been quiet.
Yeah.
He's actually here for the podcast.
Why is Bill walking out the front door with a telly?
Okay, see you later. Can't have a fire with a Mac computer.
With a Mac computer, three TVs, four radios.
Oh, sorry.
Twitter
alert!
That's a battle cry if ever I heard one.
I got told off.
You got told off for what?
Yeah, I got told off by my friend because I was leaving the theatre and I had to get home to let the dogs out. The dogs. So I was like, no, sorry, just one, because people want... We'll have more than one photo to sign. And I was like, no, it's only one. No, got to go, got to let the dogs out.
What,
no.
Was it outside the theatre? You outside have to have photos of fans.
And, yeah, and my friend was like, you can't shout at people. I said, I'm not shouting, I'm just like, you know. And he was like, no, you are slightly shouting. I was like, okay. And yeah, I sent him a text saying, you're a good friend to say that. Friends don't often tell you when to correct you.
No.
They don't, do they? And I was like, thank you so much.
We've been asking the Twitter sphere, if you were invisible for the day, where would you go? Where would you head to, William?
Oh, Buckingham Palace.
Yes.
Oh, no, Balmoral.
Would you?
Yeah, because no one gets into Balmoral. I want Balmoral. And just like in the sitting room, no one's bedrooms or any of that.
Just have a shifty.
But I'd want to talk to them.
Well, you could be a poltergeist. Just push some things over.
Philip, the jar of marmalade's just... Someone's eaten. Philip? Don't make me go.
We've had such a funny smorgasbord of responses to this question. Natalie O says that she would go to the Oval Office and give him a scare more than any X-Men could.
I quite like that.
I've never seen an X-Men film. Do they go to the Oval Office and scare someone?
Never seen X-Men.
No. What have I been doing?
I don't know.
I like watching people having feelings. I like Bridges in Madison County.
Don't you dare tell me that the man with the extendable tongue does not have feelings for X-Men.
Oh, Joanna Snellen says, I'd go and watch my son at school. He's just started in reception. I worry about him all day.
That's adorable.
Mm. Yeah. Do you remember The Secret Life of 3-Year-Olds, that show they did?
Oh, my God, it was amazing.
Oh, my God. For many reasons, it was clever, but it was exactly the same as adult life. And I thought what was quite interesting is that how people try and get other people to be on side and get them to do things that they want to, and how boys were able to use violence to interact and get their own way, whereas girls didn't feel that they were able to use it. So they had to curry favour with people and try and get them through gossip and persuasion. That's how they got their own way. And I thought that was really interesting as to whether that's something that's learned or if it's instinctive. Helen Reed says she'd go backstage at a theatre just before curtain up to get a feel of all the anticipation and excitement.
Well, how interesting, because I do absolutely love what goes on the side of stage and behind the stage at theatres. Because at cabaret, honestly, there's the show that's going on to the audience and then there's a whole other show that's going on behind the scenes. In the Royal Ballet in London, you can get stage manager seats or something where you can sit side of stage.
Oh, wow.
And you watch the ballet from the wings.
Amazing.
And a friend of mine always says that the sort of ambience and what goes on in the wings of a theatre is super duper special. And I couldn't really even put it in words, but it is like this sort of arrested time where literally you'll get like one of the dancers will just be chatting, going, yeah, anyway, so I went to prep, couldn't get the right, hang on a sec. And they'll run on, do this amazing dance, and then like exhausted come off and go, yeah, just didn't have any avocado. Mm. You know.
Can I tell you why I think that is?
Anyone?
Because it's the same reason why smoking areas are brilliant places for conversation. You always get in a brilliant chat in a smoking area, and it's because you are guaranteed that you've got to leave. There's no anxiety about how this is going to end because you can just walk off because you know you've got to walk on stage in 3 seconds.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And that's why smoking here is great because you finish a cigarette and you go, okay, bye. So you become...
Oh yes, you're not trapped to someone.
Yeah. So you don't start a conversation with trepidation because sometimes you start a conversation because you know it's a topic that you can get out of in 5 minutes.
Shit. We have more of your tweets, comments coming up. And now it's time for our fascinating conversation with the pop star, Marika Hackman.
I'm trembling. I'm shaking.
Is it your blood sugar?
No, it's my excitement about being able to share this conversation with Marika Hackman.
Well, she came to my house. Charming of her to bring me a present. Everyone loves a scented candle.
No one wants
a donkey. She didn't bring me a present. But that's just one strike against her, because otherwise, listeners, you're in for a treat. She is charming, erudite, very funny. I'm slightly in love with her. This is our conversation with Marika Hackman.
And if I may, I'll set the scene. Will begins the interview with a stroke of genius in some respects, a bum stretch.
I need to just stretch out my thing.
What's happening to your feet?
I just need to stretch out my bum.
Why?
Because it gets painful.
Oh, I have to take a picture of this.
Do you feel like a gay artist?
Yes, and I think particularly with the last record I've just made, I think it's just the response from people coming up to me in places like Salt Lake City, like these kids, like these like 15-year-olds and stuff, and coming up and being like, "You helped me realize who I am." You like, and saying stuff like that, and I've realized like how important it was I made that album for me as well to kind of carry on. It's been amazing.
Like,
that's amazing.
Yeah.
Were you nervous about doing that in your lyrics?
Yeah, I mean, I certainly was worried about kind of being defined by that like early on in my career, and I think that's why my lyrics are much more kind of shrouded in metaphor. But I was never pretending to be anything that I wasn't either.
Mm.
By the time I was writing this record, I'd already released like about 30 songs. So music was there, I'm here, like, hello. So I just think I kind of relaxed back into it and I kind of really opened up. I felt a lot more confident. But I got, when I wrote Boyfriend, like, these lyrics kind of came out and then I was like, okay, this is what's happening now. Like, I'm going to be this guy, this bold. And I was like, okay, well, like, yeah, who knows what's going to happen? Am I ready for this? And then I was just like, fuck it. It's funny. It's a really funny song. Like, I like it. Let's put it out. And I'm so fucking glad I did.
You're a very authentic person, so it's coming from an authentic place, not a sensational place.
Yeah, no, because I didn't want anyone to ever think of me that I was using my sexuality to make a thing, to kind of get in with a certain crowd. And everything I write is just because it's something that's happened. I'm like obviously very self-obsessed, but it's just stuff that's like happened to me or like how I'm feeling about something, and it's all deeply personal.
But do you think that almost, so you started writing music and you're like, I don't want my music to be about my sexuality, and therefore, so it, being a gay person who makes films, right? So music video director, you obviously, no one cares if you're gay when you're directing a music video because you're making a song, a video for the artist. But when I was then asked to go into like meetings at like Film 4 or whatever, like, so what do you want to make? Like, you're gay, like what's the gay film? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I was like, obviously no one was that blunt or rude, but as in, they're there to talk to you about that kind of stuff because you represent that section of society. And I was like, it didn't make me angry or anything. I just thought, I'm not really that interested in doing that because I don't really feel like I don't want to become necessarily a gay filmmaker. But then I sort of had to go through this whole thing and then realised that actually I was a gay voice and therefore the first thing I would do would be gay, and that was okay.
Yeah.
And I wondered if that chimed with you, that you were like, actually, I am gay, so I'm just going to write it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, that's. I think that's completely exactly really? How I feel. Yeah, and I mean, I think as well when I look back, I mean, I started having music like as my career, I suppose, when I was like 19, and that's when I came out. So, like, of course, at that point in my life, I wasn't writing songs that were going to be like explicitly kind of talking about me being gay. So yeah, I just think that kind of confidence and that growth, like, and also feeling like I can do it in the right way, you know, by just letting it kind of happen rather than overthinking it because I'm kind of worried, or, you know, like worried about if my grandma sees it or something.
Thinking about your lyrics, I wanted to ask you a question that we ask ourselves each other a lot is like, do you feel any sense of community among gay women?
Yeah, I think, I mean, also just a very, very high percentage of female musicians are gay. It feels like everyone I meet, I do feel like there's a kind of sense of community, but I feel like it's not an exclusive thing, you know, it's just, maybe it's just women in music. I don't know if it's a specific to gay thing, but I have, yeah, like loads and loads of female friends who are musicians, and we all like play together and like go to shows together, and it's just, I feel like everyone has each other's backs, like everyone's trying to help each other out. Which is really nice. And I don't actually, I've never really thought about that much. But yeah, it does feel like that.
How did you come to music? Take us from
our journey.
Music for you.
Well.
You were in a band, no?
Yes. So as a child, I was like learning the piano like from like when I was like four. So I was kind of quite like a musical family, or certainly a family that loves music. I was always writing on any instrument that I had. It felt like a natural thing before I probably even realised that it was a whole, like, writing a song kind of thing, you know?
Oh, wow.
I did the drums and the bass and the recorder. And then, yeah, grade five.
Grade five?
No.
Don't tell
Took
me
it
moved,
way too far.
Did you move to the piccolo?
No.
Oh, gosh.
It was when they started trying to make me play the bigger ones that were like, it's all different.
And oh, I like those ones.
They sound a lot nicer.
Were you ever tempted by the bassoon?
No, oboe is what I wanted, but apparently I didn't have the right mouth.
What?
That's bullshit. You have a certain mouth for the reed.
Don't
the
you
reed,
take yeah. that. Okay.
I know, maybe I should learn it now.
I get a bit cross about oboes, etc., because I think I think it's really nice at school if you learn an instrument. Like the guitar and the piano are such sociable instruments, and you put in so much work. It's really good that the guitar and piano seem to be able to live on after school. Whereas I learned the cornet, I wanted to I wanted to learn the trumpet, but they didn't have any. So they were like, do you want a cornet? And it stank.
Oh, yeah. Stink.
I'm laughing.
Cornet is like a small silver trumpet.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh.
But it's pointless. I spend all that time learning, and then I leave. When am I going to play a cornet?
Yeah, you can't like whip it out at a party.
No, and you don't. Yeah, and that's
sing along to it.
Having music is brilliant, and I just feel like everyone has to leave it at 18 because of.
Yeah,
I'd love to hear you play the cornet.
Yeah, so
can it be the theme? Can it be the theme? Please play us out with the cornet one episode, maybe series. Tell me. So, did you go into a band?
So, well, I was in lots of bands. I was at quite. It was quite like a musical school. And, but, you know, when you're 14, everyone wants to be in a band, right? Everyone's like, yeah. So I was playing drums at this point. I was in like four or five different bands, and we just used to play covers. So that was actually really good because I started playing like in front of people, which is obviously like terrifying when you do it for the first time. And if you're playing the drums and you fuck up, like everyone knows. And I had it because I was in like concert band as well. This is where, you know, you need your cornets and stuff. And I had to do the big like crashy cymbals, and it was like the last like beat of the song, and the conductor, I had like 145 bars of rest that I had to count, so the conductor was like, I'll just look at you and then smash them. And I was like, okay, great. So there's like building up, and the band just go like jump, like play their last note. He looks at me, and then I just crash the cymbals like a beat later after everyone stops, and all the air gets caught as well. So in that moment the air got caught because I didn't hit them properly and blew all of my music all over the floor. And I was just like, fucking great.
How old were you then?
That was probably when I was like 16. Just like moodily standing at the back, playing percussion.
But you went to Beedales, right?
Yes, yeah.
I have spoken to many people who've been to Beedales. It has such mythology attached to it.
I'd say it's like a stigma.
Yes.
Because it's certainly been used kind of against me in my career. I think it's just this idea that I'm like a stuck up little cow that's had everything handed to me on a plate.
Really?
And, like, pure nepotism has got me where I am. Like, certainly articles just pick up on it, people write about it, they focus in on it, and then the comments underneath, which I never read, but I was at once alerted to an Observer piece that had just gone in really hard, and I had another interview, and they were like, oh, so did those comments underneath that article upset you? And I was like, huh? Oh. And I had a look, and yeah, it's just people just being like really nasty, and they have no idea like what my life was like, and also the fact that I know I've been incredibly lucky, and I've kind of I'm really aware of that, and I was never just like waltzing through life just being like ha ha ha, like it's like this for everyone, like that's not the kind of person I am, so it just really fucks me off.
When you read those comments, has that been hard to shake? Did they kind of lodge into you?
No, I mean, I'm very, I think I know myself very well as a person, and I'm quite like grounded, braggy.
No, it's really important.
It's amazing.
But yeah, and I think the thing that just frustrates me is like just that people might be thinking that it's been a certain way, and the idea that it's always talked about. You know, when I sit down and have an interview with a big newspaper because I've just made a record, they always want to talk about that, and then I'm like, but I just made this thing, and that's like what this the whole this was all about, was talking about my record. But you know,
can I say something? I've just put my hand up.
Young at the back.
In the sort of pop, I use pop in the broad term, in the music business, I always found that really difficult, because it just, I would get so frustrated that I'd make a record, you know, for like 2 years, be very proud of it, and the artistry would literally just be glossed over. And they would just focus on, like, they'd be like, so what's it like to be gay?
Because they just, it's a story. They're not interviewing anyone because they, like, actually want to help promote a record and understand about it. So often it's just because they want to, like, have a good story for their editor.
Yeah.
And people are going to be like, what's, like, what's the angle? It's always the fucking angle.
It has to be an angle.
Yeah.
I used to find it hard as someone that worked really hard with a lot of therapy to know myself.
Yeah.
It would still test me.
Yeah.
Because if someone brings up, you know, if I've got a spot on my nose and someone mentioned it, you know, 40 times, in the end, I kind of would become a bit self-conscious of it, even though I'm quite comfortable with the fact I've got spots on my nose. It tested me.
Yeah.
It would test me. Yeah. See, I would imagine with where you're kind of placed in the music industry that you probably get quite a few publications that would want to know about your music, and
it's mainly always just kind of like the broadsheets that I'm most surprised by, because I kind of think,
me too,
like, come on guys.
And what do they say, like, ex B-Dales,
best mates of Cara Delevingne and all that stuff, and it's like, it's, this is all so like far removed. Oh, ex model, which is just absolute bullshit. I've never been a model in my life. So it was one of those music things, because you know they do like loads of, they work with loads of artists
when you sing, or you, was it,
and
photos?
So I was, it was a video of me playing a song I'd written, and there were three other bands that did it as well. For some reason I'm an ex-model, and no one else who's ever done like a Burberry music thing is. It's just so, so bizarre.
I think that's quite chauvinist, maybe.
Yeah, I think,
or
I mean,
some kind of patriarchal thing in there.
Because it does almost feel like, oh, model turned musician.
Yeah.
It kind of puts a negative on it straight away, because it's like, I wasn't really ever like a proper musician. I was just a model, and now I'm just having a little go, you know?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
That was also 6 years ago, like right at the start of my career. And then just the other day, like on Six Music, Huey Morgan was playing my song. It's called Time's Been Reckless. And he says my name wrong. I think he says like Marika or Marika or something. And then he says, he's an ex-model, and this song is called Time's Been Reckless, and I suppose it is for people who are models. Like, sorry, what?
That's mental.
That's still
There's a
happening.
Whole story, which is bollocks.
Bullshit, yeah.
That someone's picked up.
Yeah.
That's...
it's just very lazy journalism.
Does that show the kind of like bizarreness? Do you laugh at those kind of things?
I find it funny. I mean, it's still a little bit frustrating, but I think I'm far enough. Sorry, I'm shedding hair like all over your flat.
It's either you or the dogs, and the dogs aren't here, so
here you can have mine.
I don't know where they are, actually.
Can I just take a sharp right turn here? I wanted to ask you about objectification. We talked about this the other week. So I was saying, if you're a gay man, right, it's really interesting that an older gay man was talking to me at a party, and I had met this person when I was like 16, and I'm now 35, 31. And he was like, oh God, yeah, you know, you were really hot when you were 16. He was going on and on at me about it. Lovely compliment, whatever. But also I was like, I found it really annoying because I think that men have a habit of doing this thing where they feel that they can switch a conversation to sexual and they decide. Do you know what I mean? And it's like, no, I don't want to be viewed sexually. And why have you made this like an assumption on my behalf that I want that to turn into a sexual discussion? I imagine that is a different version of that happens for women as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think in a way for women, it's such a kind of like a little like low hum in the background that you almost, you start to forget that it's there. But even stuff, I mean, last night I was walking home and some guy just like saying stuff to me on the street, and then I walked back again with my kebab and this guy just reached out and stroked my hair, the back of my head, and I turned around and said fuck off. And I was quite drunk by this point and quite aggressive. I just also had a really, I'll tell you about it in a second, a really irritating discussion with a fan, in inverted commas, in the pub. So yeah, I just like turned around, swore at this guy. I'm just like, I think I was just like, how fucking dare you? Like, what do you think you're doing? And I just like walked home. And it's like, he was just kind of like, ooh, and he's like with all his mates, like turned around. I just walked as fast as I could back.
Were you scared?
No, because I think...
You're holding a kebab?
Yes. And it was quite spicy.
And I'm not afraid to use it.
I think I was just wanted to eat. I genuinely think I was starving.
You were just hangry.
And pissed. And I was, I was hangry and I just like stomped home. But no, I'll tell you about also, this is, I mean, this isn't like objectification, but it's a, it was just a classic case of mansplaining. It was in a pub last night and this guy comes up, and it's always men who open with a line like this as well, where they say like, hey, like I really like your music. I didn't actually like know about you, but like my girlfriend introduced me and like I've been to a couple of your shows. So it's like, right, so you're trying to do a power play already, like you don't really give a shit, but you're coming up to talk to me, so no, like I'm the one here that's like got technically holding the power, but you're really trying to undermine that. And then he was like, oh my God, he was, his girlfriend actually walked off because she was so embarrassed. He then started saying he'd seen two shows, he thought one of them was better than the other one, which is always a lovely thing to hear. And then he said, I've noticed that like you all use like Fender guitars and Fender amps, like you should really change that up, you know, like you should use different amps because you're not getting different tones out of your instruments. And he was going on and on about
God, man's playing.
And my bassist Jelly, she was standing next to me and she was just like fuck, I don't know what's about to happen. And so I just turned around and I was like, if I'd been sober, I probably would have been being very polite and kind of just like, oh, like thanks, yeah, blah, blah, blah. Like walked off, but I was getting quite riled up. And I was just like, oh, and what is it that you do? And he was like, I'm a primary school teacher. And I went, ah. And I was like, well, I've been doing this for 6 years. The sounds I have on stage are exactly what I want. I know what I'm using. Like, I have a very good relationship with Fender. Like, I'm trying to get by in this, and I don't need people who have no idea what they're talking about telling me how to do my stage setup. That is all in, like, this is what I want. If I want something different, I'll change it. And then we ended on fine, like we shook hands and stuff, it was fine. But now it's just annoying because if I ever do want to have like a Vox or an Orange or something, a different amp, he's going to be in the fucking crowd like, oh yeah, that was me. And it's like, no, it fucking wasn't.
Do you know what's interesting though?
Did he apologise? Sorry to interrupt.
Oh, no.
He didn't really apologise. He kind of said that he felt like he might have come across as a little patronising because he is a primary school teacher and that's how he tends to talk to people.
So
who are children.
Patronizing you there.
Yeah.
I'll explain to you why I was patronizing. Yeah. Wow.
I think it's very shaming as well what that man did, because he's basically, you didn't ask for his opinion.
No.
He just gave his opinion
and
sort of threw it on. And the power thing, I think, was really interesting what you said about, he felt like he needed to say, well, I didn't really know who you were, but then I came with.
But he obviously like
wanted to sort of.
Just because he felt awkward because he was approaching me as someone who he recognised and I think admired. It sounded like he did like my music, which was the kind of, it's just so strange. But yeah, so he was coming up to me already, I guess, in a position where you feel like you're on the back foot.
So he just had to kind of undercut that. I do think that happens quite a lot.
Yeah.
I experience that quite a lot.
Yeah.
Will and I did a video where the theme was Crufts. So Will takes a shit dog to Crufts and wins was the story. We infiltrated the world of dog trainers in the making of the video, which is so fun because you just enter this whole world of like people you've never... There's a whole industry that you've never accessed, you know what I mean? And Mary Ray was our trainer and she had her best friend helped train Will to dance with the dogs.
Oh my God.
They knew who Will was. He just had an album out, obviously. So then I can't remember her name, Mary Ray's best friend.
Yeah, no, she was brilliant. She came with her own sandwiches, didn't she?
Mary Ray's friend comes in the morning, she goes, Will, I listened to your album last night. And you were like, oh, good, thanks. And you're like, here we go. She goes, you've had a lot of pain, haven't you? We were like, yes. Standing there with a cup of coffee in the middle of a field. I was like, is this the time? Yes. Because people, like when that guy approached you, like, I genuinely think people feel that they're talking to the TV.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, there's a screen between you. They feel that there's a screen between you. Or they feel that you're a representative of the person. You're not the person.
Yeah.
But can I say something that tied together what you were just saying? Oh, what that person is not doing, which is all about connection again, is if he'd come up and been vulnerable, then you would have loved him.
Yes.
If he'd said, we don't know each other and I feel nervous, or that's a bit glib, but it's like, if he just said more what he was feeling rather than feeling he had to create some sort of stack of defense
so that
he could win.
Yeah, and I hate that the advice thing when it's not asked for from people who don't even do this as their job is so frustrating.
Mm.
Of course I fucking know what I'm doing.
Do you think the music industry is chauvinist? I feel that some artists, they say that they're feminist, but they're not at all.
Right, yeah.
You know, they're like, I'll do this with my body. But I'm like, well, you're just kind of like playing into...
I kind of understand the thinking behind it, but I think when you actually dig a little deeper, it doesn't really make sense, because it's just playing right back into having to feel like you need to sexualize yourself to feel like comfortable in this world. So... I don't get it.
Why does sexualization have to be part of the discourse between you and the public? Why is that being... Because it's music.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's like... Sex sells.
It gets me... It really annoys me. It really annoys me, because I think if those artists really dig deep, it's like, well, hang on, why are you feeling the need to sexualize, to take off all your clothes and parade that?
Sometimes I feel a little bit confused with Beyonce, because she says she's a feminist... and stands up for a lot of things, but then sometimes I see there's a video where she's in a bikini like dry riding a machine gun, and I think, what message does that send out?
She had called her tour like the Mrs. Carter tour.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Attaching herself to her husband's name and not even like owning her fucking own presence, and she's like, I find that bizarre.
But then the album, isn't it about him having affairs?
Yeah.
And then she's there, and
Becky with the good hair.
That kind of feminism is not... And visual is so boring, I think. And you go back to like Grace Jones, Bowie's feminist, you know, Joni Mitchell. It's like,
but
what are you doing? What are these artists doing? Katy Perry. It's like, oh, God.
She kills me. I'm sorry for her.
But can I ask you a question that is not meant to sound antagonistic? But do you feel you have a right to say that?
Yes. I feel I have a right just as a sort of person of the world.
Yeah, yeah.
But then, you know, I took off my top in a video, and I felt like I was doing it in an interesting way. I was learning how to swim. You know, so it was like me in arm pants.
So you did use your sexuality. Was there anything wrong with that?
I just personally felt like I was coming from an interesting place.
Mm.
I wouldn't do a video where I was like...
It was very funny.
Writhing. It was quite funny.
But you were being... It was like... Will's hot bod, you know what I mean? Like, I remember it at the time, and it was...
And I like to kind of...
But there was...
I like the fact that it was Will's hot bod in Bermuda shorts and a lineup of, like, six-year-old kids, and we're all learning how to swim. And it wasn't sexual. I wasn't sexualized, so it was up to people to sexualize
me. Well, because I don't think nudity is necessarily straight in with, like, sexual
stuff. Yeah, that's cool.
Stuff.
That's really true.
Like, it's just a human body, like... I think you see it all the time in art and stuff, like, and it doesn't seem like it's a sexual thing. I think it's more about how it's being used and the context and stuff.
Do you like fashion?
I mean, I've never been massively, like, don't really know what's going on a lot of the time with fashion. It feels like quite like a complex and terrifying thing. And I generally, clothes wise, like to just go for things that I feel like physically comfortable in. But then a suit, and that's why I like wearing suits, because they're very, very comfortable. And then I just always feel great in a suit. and then quite easy, collection. No?
Yeah. So you just kind of like, it's literally two items.
Yeah,
really.
And then you're smart. There's no like, is this smart enough? Because it's a suit. Yeah. Whereas like girl clothes, like dresses and stuff, it's like, is that the right kind of dress for this event?
Yeah.
Like, how long is it? Like, you know, what is it like too bright? Is it too this? And then it's just like, oh my God.
There's a lot going on there. Do you think, like, with women, there's... I wonder myself, there's a pressure to kind of show off the body to as much as it could be showed off, to, like, tuck in there and accentuate that.
Yeah.
I hear that a lot.
It's just too much energy spent thinking about stuff like that. That's the thing, you see, I think I actually am invested in looking like I've just rolled out of bed most days. Like, I don't... I never wear makeup, ever.
Really?
It's just... People spend so much time, like hours in the mornings, like before, just to leave the house, like full on. And yeah, clothes wise, it's just if it's like clean, I'll shove it on and walk out. I don't even really look in the mirror much. This is why I've realized I've just got like a gravy stone on my leg, actually. I just noticed it in your full length mirror upstairs.
Was that, what were you, were you having something with gravy?
Actually, I think it might have been a kebab I had last night when I got home.
I think it's interesting, just what you were saying about makeup, like... I'm a boy, obviously.
What?
So yeah, at time of print, I don't wear makeup and stuff. Yeah. But I not so, and I don't wear makeup and stuff. But is makeup to do with women policing each other? Do you think, or is it about like who's it for?
Yeah, it's funny because it's like so often when I'm having this conversation with people that wear a lot of makeup. It's like, it's always for them. Like, it's always, you know, they always say that. And like, maybe it is. Maybe you like the fact that you spend like 2 hours every day, like plastering your face and like stuff that's really bad for your skin. But fundamentally, the reason you're doing that is because you think it makes you look better. But why do you feel that you need to look better than like how you are? That's and who's telling you what's good to look like?
Yes.
So as much as someone says it makes them feel great about themselves, that shouldn't need to happen in order to feel great about yourself. So I think it's just society, like, you know, and girls start wearing makeup like super young. Like, I remember when everyone starts wearing makeup. And
yeah, I wonder if makeup comes from that traditional kind of, like, I don't know why I'm thinking 50s, but like the housewife that goes to bed with makeup on. Makeup was for men. Originally.
Well, when people, you hear as well, like people who like go out, they're all glammed up for the night and they go out and they sleep with someone and they then have to sneak out of the room in the morning before whoever the other person is wakes up so they can redo their makeup so that when they wake up, it's not like a different person sleeping next to them. I mean,
yeah, like in Bridesmaids.
Like in Bridesmaids, yeah. But
My sister's friend used to do it. And there was always this joke about like, oh, you know, you wish you've never seen the real me kind of thing. And it's like, well, you know, like it's about... There's the thing about being vulnerable, isn't there? Like not allowing yourself to be vulnerable in front of that person who, listen, on a one night stand, I sort of get it. It's like, you know, because I want, you're trying to control their feelings towards you. But in a long-term relationship or whatever, that's madness. And actually, it reminds me a little bit what you're saying about your lyrics of like being honest is about allowing yourself to be vulnerable.
Yes.
And that's when people connect with you.
Yeah, exactly. You've got to like open engage. It up. I mean, Tim, he's one of my managers. When I was writing this record, and I was kind of, there's a few bits in there. There's like a song called Eastbound Train, and there's a bit where it's kind of like high pitched voices going like "Stick it to the man," and it, like I was finding it funny when I did it. It's kind of like a little joke, and then I sent it over, and I was like, I don't know if I should keep this in because maybe it's just a bit dumb and like silly. And Tim was just like, the thing is, you have to open yourself up to be ridiculed. You can't control like a creative wall like fully because. Then there's no point to it because the whole point of like any sort of art is to connect. So yeah, you have to be vulnerable. Yeah.
Do you read reviews?
Yes.
How can you do that?
Because they're all great. No, I'm very fascinated by how people kind of infer my work and how they take it and kind of because I spend so long, kind of so shut off. You know, like for me the process. Like day in day out, when it's finally out in the world, I'm just like, can't wait to hear what people think about it. Like even if it's like negative, I sometimes find that also just quite funny because people get like really over the top angry about some like certain things, which I find really hilarious.
You saying that you like reading reviews?
Yeah,
I think is because you have a good sense of self.
Well, that's what I, that's kind of think, I think why I like knowing what people think, because I'm never going to turn around and be like, if it's something that, I don't know what this is, but you know, if the someone turns around and says that they don't like my song, I'm not going to then look at the song and be like, oh yeah, it's shit.
Mm.
Like, I know in order for me to put something out into the world, I like it.
Mm. That's amazing.
So then it's kind of knowing that, I feel like I might be coming across as a very arrogant asshole.
You are. You are. It's honestly, it is, it's podcast gold. Keep on going.
We have.
I'm about to monologue for 10 minutes, so just go.
We'll be two arrogant assholes, don't worry. Then I'll be coming up from the rear, number three.
There's a difference between arrogance and confidence.
Yeah.
Which is gratitude. And I think, and that's that. Someone told me that years ago. It was a psychiatrist. He later got struck off. But before that happened, and I've never forgotten that.
Yeah.
So you don't strike me as someone who's arrogant. You see, I could not cope with that.
Mm.
And I can't read reviews for my acting either.
Really?
But I can totally have feedback from people that I feel safe with. So like a director or a producer.
Oh, good, because I wanted to say.
Anyway, moving on. But I see, I just can't.
And why?
Ah, because, yes, because if I read a review and someone points out something, let's say they go, oh, I love it when Will Young as the MC skips on stage. I can't fully trust myself to not then accentuate that moment, because I'll be like, oh, someone loved it when I skipped.
But what's, you know, wrong what I mean? With that?
So, because it's not truthful, because I'm relying on someone who's not there for the whole journey of the show, doesn't have a vision for the show, which is part of not just me, but a whole company.
Ooh.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I get too I just can't fully trust myself.
I mean, I guess that makes a lot of sense. I think it would be like, obviously, because that's something that's still going.
Yes.
Every night,
yes.
Rather than as something that you've already kind of just done.
That's, yes.
So I think I'd probably be the same. Like, I mean, I'm not that fussed about sort of like live reviews and stuff like that. I'm just playing music.
Yeah,
I'm not having to really like perform as such. Yeah. And I think that would probably, I just have the same kind of feeling.
I do think it is a performance, playing music. You know,
yeah.
And the singer isn't just singing. You're making so many decisions quickly.
Yeah, it's true.
You might be like, oh, I can't get that note because I smoked too many fags last night. So, okay, I've got to go from there.
Yes.
You know what I mean? It's duck that's looking, it's paddling frantically underwater.
Yeah.
I do think it's a performance, just a different type.
Yeah.
And when you do that, I mean, just for the listeners, when Marika does her tap routine, my God, it is. I mean, I've never seen anyone in the pop.
I've not seen a backflip and tap before.
Yeah, kids love it.
And DM tap, you know, my
tap
God.
Flip, they call it.
A tap flip.
But what?
I feel we have to almost finish.
Yeah, I just want to ask you one question that I've spoken about a bit, which is that by being a gay man, you have a lot of things put on you in your identity and. Yeah. But people assume things on your behalf.
Yep.
Like, I like the Golden Girls or whatever, which actually I like. But I actually don't feel neither male nor female. I never have. I've just felt other to everyone else, but been also fine within my body. Like, I don't feel like I'm trapped in the wrong body at time of going to Brent. And but do you feel like you are a woman or you are a gay woman?
I've never really... Kind of like what you just said, I've always just felt like I am who I am, and I've never really felt the need to really define that. People change all the time, and like you feel differently about yourself in different stages of your life. And so, like, I mean, I feel like a woman, but I also, when I was a kid, I kind of just like felt like I wanted to be a boy. I didn't feel like, what is this that I'm in? I just felt like I kind of identified with like boys a lot more, and I wanted to like dress like boys and hang out with boys, and but now I feel quite like womanly. And in terms of my sexuality, like, yes, I suppose I'm gay, but actually I don't know how I might because people are people, and I find people really attractive, and I could fall in love with a man like in the next 10 years. It might like shock myself a bit and wouldn't have necessarily seen it coming, but to kind of, I find it strange that we so feel the need to stick everything in a box to make it feel safe.
Mm.
like, I think every, like, I just think the whole idea of, like, sexuality and gender should all just be completely gone. But it's just hard to get to that point, because you have to identify and you have to kind of come together as a group and talk about stuff to get to that point. But I think people should just be taken for being people and being, like, nice people or nasty people.
Do you think we'll ever get there?
No. I don't think so.
Well, good to end on a bit of hope. Look at me, Marika. Where are my manners? I got these for us to eat. Will you take these home?
Aww, these
biscuits and cakes,
what about
and all sorts.
You guys?
That's for you. Sorry, I totally forgot.
But I can't just take them all.
No, please.
We should. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
No, thanks for having me.
Heavens to Betsy. That was our chat with Marika Hackman. How are you feeling, Will, hearing that back?
I just think she's cool in the true sense of the word, which is
cucumber.
Stop making me laugh because my poor throat.
I think we should have a look back at Twitter and see what you guys have been getting in touch with us about when we asked, what would you do if you were invisible for the day?
Yes, let's have a look.
Veronica says, the airport. Wahoo, watch out, Hawaii. What's your go-to destination for some winter sun there?
I think Caribbean, maybe Sri Lanka.
Yeah, I went to Sri Lanka. That was lovely. We had a peacock in our garden, just mooched around. That is an event-level impression of a peacock.
That was really good.
Where did you learn that?
I don't know.
Do you know what was amazing, particularly about it, is it sounded quite distant. So it was like you threw your voice.
Girls, come here.
Hello? Somebody upstairs?
No, it's me.
No.
It's Bill.
And Deal... DeLovo says Rihanna's house. No, that would be a fun house to hang out
in. I would be going on there.
My friend went on the Rihanna 777 tour, where she rented a plane and filled it with journalists and went on tour with them.
The journalists went on tour with Rihanna.
Fans and press all got on this plane and they went sort of around the world. 7-day leg of her worldwide tour. And it was pandemonium, apparently. Like, everyone partying 24/7. Everyone was absolutely broken. And the person who was up later than everybody else for the entire thing was Rihanna.
Wow.
And she's the one who had to go out and perform every night. They could at least go and have a snooze. Apparently she is the most extraordinary, amazing individual.
I love her.
What would you do if you were invisible for the day? Well, I know what I would do.
What would you do?
I'd go look around houses.
Oh my God, yeah.
Yeah. And actually go straight to Regent's Park and those beautiful, like, colonnaded houses around the edge. And I'd get straight in there and I would have a look around all of those. I don't want to see the people. I don't want to know their business. What I want to see is what it's like inside there, because I dream of living there.
Quick question.
Mm-hmm.
Being invisible doesn't mean you can walk through walls, though, does it?
No, but someone would open a door and I would sneak in as they opened it.
So there would be, logistically, there'd actually be quite a lot of stuff. So, for example, the people that say they want to fly to Hawaii... They'd have to have a free seat, or they'd have to be just standing.
You don't want to stand all the way to Hawaii.
And if you're invisible, people would bump into you, so they'd feel you there. So it's not invisible like a ghost. I don't want to shit on this. I'm just missing
the point of the fun part of the question.
I've not known
you to be a naysayer till now, but let's not dwell on the physics.
Call me Mr. Practical. And since having a day with children, you just can't be Mr. Invisible and get Winnie brushing her teeth.
No, exactly. Because you are a parent now.
I'm a, what's that?
Parent.
A parent, yes.
Yeah. Spirit Florist says, to Kate Bush's studio to watch her make music.
Now we're talking, that's good.
She says, but it's Kate, so I expect she'd know I was there anyway.
Oh, that's even better.
And very true. Do you remember the first time you heard Kate Bush?
Is it me? No. I think it's running up that hill because
yeah,
it was on a kids programme.
Was it?
On BBC.
What? Queen's Nose?
No.
I think that was ITV.
That was brilliant. That was a book, wasn't
it? Talk about the Queen's Nose all the time in meetings.
Isn't that a book?
Mm-hmm. Two things I talk about in meetings a lot, which always falls dead. I talk about the Queen's Nose and I talk about beaches.
People don't know beaches.
No, people are like, why is he talking about beaches?
I don't like beaches. No.
Why?
Sorry. Oh, gosh, I saw that in your eyes
then. I'm really angry.
What? I don't know.
What don't you like about it?
You really are angry. I think I've watched it once.
Well, there's the problem for a start, okay? That is a 15-time watch.
Did you ever know that you... I don't like that song.
Okay. Oh, you're so close to the end of season one and we were supposed to make it through, but I don't know if I can do this anymore, okay?
Don't, please.
I'm not, that song...
I can't look at you. I need to be invisible.
That song is life-changing for a start, okay? I want this to be a discussion. Why don't you like the song?
Your voice is tremoring. I just would like to say...
You're sorry. I accept
no,
your apology.
No, I'm not. I think it's... Sorry. I like the fact that you reference it because it obviously means a lot to you. It's just not massively my cup of tea.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know? Okay, my beaches can be your George Michael.
Yeah.
Okay. Where's Bill?
Bill? I don't know. Should we go and have a look?
You just carry on chatting. I'm going to find Bill. He's doing the fires because he's... He's gone for 20 minutes, and unless he's gone up the chimney, I don't know what's going on.
Will?
Bill? Yeah. Are you here? Yes, I'm here. Are you all right, though?
Yeah, no, I'm fine. I'm just waiting for him.
We interrupt this programme for a fireplace consultation.
Bill was waiting. I thought he was just going to come and say hi.
If I was to take a punt, I'd say that is very sadly the end of the episode.
I'm going to finish with a song.
I'm going to finish with a song. Did I ever tell you you're my homo? Everything I would like to be.
It's so lovely that you sang this version at your wedding.
I know, right?
As your vows.
Powered by Spirit Studios.